It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
Iraq asks for U.S. airstrikes and Ukrainian president proposes ceasefire. I'm Bill Michaels reporting from Washington. The top U.S. military official says Iraq has asked for U.S. airstrikes to help fight Sunni Islamist militants who have taken over key cities in the north and are threatening Baghdad. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Martin Dempsey, told a U.S. Senate subcommittee Wednesday that the Iraqi government has failed its people, and he is bitterly disappointed.
Al-Qaeda-inspired extremists raising flags over Iraq's embattled cities triggers in me the same thing that runs through the minds of any veteran who served there, which is bitter disappointment that Iraq's leaders failed to unite for the good of their people.
Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel said Iraq's Shiite leaders never carried out their commitment to form a unity government with Sunnis and Kurds. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko has proposed instituting a unilateral ceasefire in eastern Ukraine as part of a peace plan to address months of conflict in the region. Russian news agencies quoted Mr. Poroshenko on Wednesday saying the ceasefire would give separatist fighters the opportunity to disarm and those who want to leave the country a chance to get out. His comments come a day after he discussed a possible ceasefire in a telephone call with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Their conversation was only the second known direct contact between leaders of the two countries since Russia annexed Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula in March. The U.S. Central Bank says U.S. economic growth has rebounded after stalling in the first few months of this year. The top Federal Reserve officials, however, also cut the forecast for growth this year to just over 2%. The Fed says the job market continues to improve, although Fed Chair Janet Yellen says the unemployment rate is still too high. But she said the economic contraction in the January to March period has ended.
The committee thus believes that economic activity is rebounding in the current quarter and will continue to expand at a moderate pace thereafter.
She spoke in Washington Wednesday after 2 days of meetings with top Fed officials who decided to continue gradually reducing efforts to stimulate the economy through bond purchases. A massive Israeli search for three youths said to be kidnapped in the West Bank is in its sixth day. Robert Berger has this report from Jerusalem.
As Israeli forces sweep the West Bank in search of three missing teenagers, they have rearrested more than 50 Palestinians freed in a prisoner swap in 2011. Most of them are members of the Islamic militant group Hamas. Thousands of Israeli troops have been conducting house-to-house searches, focusing on the biblical town of Hebron and surrounding villages, the area where the Israeli seminary students disappeared while hitchhiking nearly a week ago. Israel says the military operation is twofold: to find the kidnapped teenagers and to deal a severe blow to Hamas. Robert Berger for VOA News, Jerusalem.
An Indian-born researcher whose work fueled a huge increase in wheat production has won the 2014 World Food Prize. Sanjaya Rajaram was announced as the winner of the annual prize at the U.S. State Department in Washington on Wednesday. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry.
Partners from the private sector outlined plans to make responsible investments in agriculture within African nations. The nations themselves commit to making reforms that attract private investment. And by bringing these partners together and attracting support from global donors, the new alliance aims to lift 50 million people out of poverty by 2022.
Rajaram is a citizen of Mexico, where he worked with other scientists to crossbreed wheat varieties and make them more adaptable to different soil types and climates. He also developed wheat types with increased resistance to disease. In World Cup action, Chile has eliminated defending champion Spain from the World Cup 2-0 in a Group B match on Wednesday. Spain suffered its second loss of the tournament after falling emphatically to the Netherlands last week 5-1. Earlier Wednesday, the Netherlands posted a 3-2 win over Australia in a Group A match, Croatia routing Cameroon 4-0. Reporting from Washington, I'm Bill Michaels.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 19th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigerian security alerts citizens in the wake of more Boko Haram threats.
Essentially, it's part of our continuing effort at sensitizing citizens, especially in relation to soft targets. In this direction, we had also issued an alert to tanker drivers.
Michael Mary is Director General of Nigeria's National Orientation Agency. South Sudan's former vice president and rebel leader wants more civil society involvement in peace talks. A Liberian prospective senatorial candidate quits because of what he calls intimidation by President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. And the United Nations wants to use unarmed drones in Mali.
In this regard, I take this opportunity to signal to the Council our intention to deploy unmanned aerial systems in order to enhance the situational awareness of MINUSMA.
Hervé Lassus is the UN peacekeeping chief. An Indian-born scientist wins World Food Prize for developing disease-resistant wheat varieties. And Brazil Football Museum attracts passionate fans. Those stories plus Marco Oman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. A spokesman says Nigeria's government has issued a nationwide terror alert after intelligence indicates that some groups want to set petroleum tankers on fire so as to create chaos and destabilize the country. Mike O'Meary tells reporter Peter Clotty that the government has sent a delegation to the country's north to help resolve the abduction of over 200 schoolgirls by Boko Haram militants.
Well, essentially, it's part of our continuing effort at sensitizing citizens, especially in relation to soft targets. In this direction, we had also issued an alert to tanker drivers who move petroleum products across the country to be on the lookout in the event that people may want to seize the availability of their facility for the purpose of causing damage and destruction to life and property. This is a warning that petrol tankers should be vigilant and tanker owners should also be on the alert, and that security agencies have stepped up surveillance and other operational duties within this area of reference.
Some people have expressed concern that despite these warnings, they are yet to see a full-fledged protection or security being intensified, and to give them confidence that these issues are being addressed. They don't see security officers around.
That is not true. Security officers are in every local government in Nigeria. There is no country can police every inch of the soil. And that is why the role of citizens become important and relevant in this case. It is possible that you wake up one day and not see a policeman throughout the day. But it does not mean that there is no security around the area. There could be other forms of security who are not in uniform, manning and providing protection. If it were not so, I think the devastation would have been even more louder. Because without the intervention and constant work and surveillance of these people, we would have been a country in siege.
What is your government doing about instilling confidence in students around Chibok who are afraid to go back to school because of the abduction of over 200 girls by Boko Haram militants?
Okay, in furtherance of the Safe School Initiative that the government plans to implement to guard against further incursion by all manner of people into school premises and inflicting deadly or whatever kind of harm or kidnap, the federal government sent a team led by the coordinating minister of the economy, Dr. Mrs. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala, and the director general of the National Emergency Management Agency, and accompanied by the former British Prime Minister, Mr. Gordon Brown, among others, to Maiduguri. They are right now currently in Maiduguri, visiting schools, assessing situations with a view to coming out with an effective intervention plan. So the Safe School Initiative program has commenced effectively, and it is a nationwide program.
Mike Omeri is Director General of Nigeria's National Orientation Agency and Coordinator of the National Information Center. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Abuja. The UN peacekeeping chief says he plans to deploy unarmed aerial vehicles to strengthen the UN mission in Mali's ability to protect civilians. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
In a briefing Wednesday before the UN Security Council, Hervé Ledsous said the UN mission in Mali, known as MINUSMA, must be in a position to identify, deter, and mitigate threats.
In this regard, I take this opportunity to signal to the Council our intention to deploy unmanned aerial systems in order to enhance the situational awareness of MINUSMA, as well as its ability to protect civilians and its own personnel.
He did not go into details on the numbers of drones the United Nations would like for the mission or when they could actually be deployed. Such a process could take several months. The United Nations has been using unmanned, unarmed drones in the Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo for several months as a test case. They say the fleet of five UAVs has proved very helpful in the protection of civilians and the delivery of humanitarian aid, as they can provide peacekeepers with real-time information on the movements of rebel groups over a large area of difficult terrain they otherwise would not be able to cover. Malian Foreign Minister Abdullahi Diouf said his government approved of the use of the unarmed drones.
These engines have not been yet deployed, but we hope it could be done as soon as possible.
Ledsous said a successful political process is vital to stabilizing Mali and urged the government and armed groups in the north to accelerate their efforts to achieve this.
The status quo cannot stand. Progress in the political process is urgent, and the time for peace talks is now.
He said the lack of dialogue has led to the sharp decline in the security situation in Kidal, where armed groups have seized military and, to an extent, administrative control over the area. The Security Council is due to review and renew the UN mission's mandate at the end of this month. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
Liberia's midterm elections are not until October this year, but already there's been a row between President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf and one of the prospective senatorial candidates for Montserrado County. Earlier this week, Christopher Neyo accused President Sirleaf of masterminding a plot to destroy him so that her son, Robert Sirleaf, who is yet to announce his intentions, could have an easy path to the Senate and eventually to the presidency of Liberia in 2017. In an interview reportedly given to the Liberian Daily Observer newspaper, President Sirleaf described Neyo as a man possessing a troubled mind. On Wednesday, Neyo withdrew his name from contention. He tells me he wants to devote his time to fighting and winning what he calls the bigger war.
Based on my experience and recent development with manipulation to have the president's son have some sort of advantage for the race, decided to do an open letter and to bring up some of the issues that I observed, you know, over the years. And that came out, and there were overwhelming support. Even though we're not doing this, you know, for public support, it was something out of my inward conviction. But I did not want to see the plate of Montserrado County and where we are in our country. I want to continue the campaign to change the direction of our country. And I don't want any kind of cloud that I'm doing this simply because I want to be a senator. So that's why I decided to withdraw and concentrate on the real issues ahead, the issues of governance, bad governance in our country, and the issue of trying to effect a change. So I'm going to spearhead a new group called the Coalition for Conscious Change. And we are going to revisit those slums where I've seen bad roads, I've seen bad schools, I've been seeing youth without skills. And we are going to invest in those areas. I'm going to mobilize resources, and we're going to do something in those communities.
Earlier in the week, you had accused the president, Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, of masterminding a plot to destroy your quest for the Montserrado County senatorial race. Do you stand by that accusation, and why did you make that accusation?
I did it because that's the fact and that's the truth. You see, all what is going on in the country, massive unemployment, of especially in young people, deplorable schools, and tremendous budget shortfall. See, spending most of our time, you know, having meetings and manipulating how to give her son some sort of advantage in a race trying to buy everybody else out. And so I have to bring this to the attention of our citizens to see what she's doing, because trying to continue a bad legacy, I believe down the road will be very unfortunate for our country. And so we have to speak out. And she tried to respond to a couple of them, and I refuted them with evidence.
I wanted to ask you, because the president, apparently she did give an interview to the Daily Observer of Liberia, in which she described you as a man possessing a troubled mind. Do you have a troubled mind?
Yes, a troubled mind to transform Liberia. The characterization that she has whenever you bring out issues that are very important to our future. When you point out the bad governance, the massive corruption, the nepotism, and what we call power granted to her son, not granted by our constitution. And when you say that, she tried to characterize you otherwise.
Christopher Nayer is a former prospective Liberian senatorial candidate for Mascerato County. You're speaking with me from Dallas, Texas. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, June 19th. Daybreak Africa time is 16 minutes past the hour. In South Sudan, the leader of the SPLM in opposition says his group is committed to negotiating an end to the country's political crisis. But Riek Machar says the negotiation led by the Intergovernmental Authority on Development, known as IGAD, is not transparent. He accused some representatives of civil society groups who are currently in Addis Ababa of supporting the government in Juba. Machar says his group wants IGAD to include civil society groups as part of the multi-stakeholders roundtable negotiations process expected to start this week.
There are difficulties in the negotiations, which I think are made up by the mediation. One, we have committed ourselves to inclusive process where political parties and civil society organizations, registered ones, and the faith-based groups are consulted as stakeholders. A process has been initiated. Unfortunately, the process was not inclusive. Those civil society organizations and the political parties and also faith-based groups that had fled the country as from December 16th have not been represented. So I have asked the mediation to ensure that these civil society organizations and the political parties and also the faith-based groups that have fled to our neighboring countries must be represented, because they are actually the victims.
Let me pick up from what you're saying, that the civil society groups that have come from Juba are not the victims. Would you elaborate more on that?
They live in Juba. They're not under fear. They're not coerced by anybody. Probably they are pro-government civil society organizations. So those who have a problem with the government in Juba have fled the country. So those who felt that things were not right and who won a peace agreement or won a change in the governance structures are the ones abroad.
Juba is complaining that they will not be on the table because one of the executive secretaries of IGAD, that's Mahjoub Muallim, made some comments that they deem insulting. Is that what your group is also feeling like?
Definitely. It was insulting to me myself as a person. I have not been known for being stupid, but that reference was very unfortunate. I thought Mahjoub would apologize for that, and then we continue with the peace process. And by the way, I want to correct one thing. We are for the IGAD mediation. We want to continue negotiating under the auspices of IGAD, but we want a transparent process of the mediation. We want the two negotiators to be the principal parties that would strike a deal with participation of the other political parties, civil society organizations, and faith-based groups.
That was Riek Machar, leader of South Sudan's rebel SPLM in opposition. He was speaking from Addis Ababa with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. The 2014 World Food Prize has been awarded to an Indian-born scientist who developed hundreds of varieties of disease-resistant wheat. The announcement was made Wednesday at the U.S. State Department. VOA's Jody Kapua reports.
The World Food Prize is given to individuals, quote, who have advanced human development by improving the quality, quantity, or availability of food in the world. It was founded by Nobel laureate Dr. Norman Borlaug, who developed new wheat varieties that helped ensure food security in many areas around the world. World Food Prize Foundation President Kenneth Quinn announced this year's recipient.
It is my honor to announce that the World Food Prize Borlaug Centennial Laureate, born in India and a citizen of Mexico, is Dr. Sanjaya Rajaram.
Ambassador Quinn says Rajaram worked closely with Borlaug.
As the head of CIMMYT's wheat breeding program for several decades, our laureate developed 480 high-yielding, disease- and stress-resistant wheat varieties that have been grown on 58 million hectares in 51 countries, thus increasing world wheat production by more than 200 million tons.
CIMMYT is the International Maize and Wheat Improvement Center. 2014 is the UN Food and Agriculture Organization's International Year of Family Farming.
It's most fitting that the 2014 World Food Prize laureate is an individual who has truly fulfilled Dr. Borlaug's last words, take it to the farmer.
The keynote address at the ceremonies was given by Secretary of State John Kerry. He highlighted the Obama administration's initiative to help ensure food security in Africa, called the New Alliance for Food Security and Nutrition.
Partners from the private sector outline plans to make responsible investments in agriculture within African nations. The nations themselves commit to making reforms that attract private investment. And by bringing these partners together and attracting support from global donors, the New Alliance aims to lift 50 million people out of poverty by 2022.
Kerry added that to confront the challenges posed to food security by climate change, it will be necessary to invent and innovate. The $250,000 World Food Prize will be formally awarded in October in Des Moines, Iowa. At that time, the Borlaug Dialogue will focus on feeding a world of 9 billion people. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
In the heart of Sao Paulo, Brazil, is the Football Museum, an interactive attraction like no other. For lovers of the World Cup, world history, and Brazilian culture, this is one of the country's prime destinations. VOA's Ramon Taylor takes us there.
Over 100 years of football history in one of the most emblematic stadiums in the world. After visiting this museum, you'll understand why Brazilians live and breathe this sport. As you enter the stadium, Brazilian football legend and three-time World Cup champion Pelé welcomes you personally in three languages. In fact, he greets about 1,000 visitors per day on average, 2,000 per day during the World Cup. The sight is a treat for more than just the eyes. You'll hear the sounds of goals and whistles and experience the taste of victory and defeat. Daniela Alfonsi is the museum's content director.
We have 15 rooms in long-term exhibition that works with the motion, that works with experiences. So in each room, you can feel the voice of the bleachers, of the supporters on the bleachers. You can hear the radio narrations. You can see the football as art more than as a sport.
Pelé once called football o jogo bonito, or the beautiful game, a nickname that has stuck ever since. In this museum, it is easy to see why. Carlos Acosta is a Colombian who lives in Sao Paulo. He sees Brazilians' passion for football as an inspiration to the world.
It's contagious. The Brazilians breathe football all the time. They eat football. They drink football all day.
There is one room in particular that tugs at every Brazilian's heart, a theater that mourns Brazil's historic 2-1 defeat by Uruguay in the 1950 World Cup final in front of more than 90,000 fans at the Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro. Luckily, the sadness is short-lived. With a record 5 World Cup titles, Brazilians have a lot to be proud of, as displayed in the interactive Hall of Heroes. And in case that's still not enough to entertain your senses, there are games designed to bring out the competitor in everyone, not to mention an opportunity to become the newest hero of the 2014 World Cup. Reporting from Sao Paulo, Brazil, I'm Ramon Taylor for VOA News.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Thursday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on the FIFA World Cup in Brazil. The six-year era of Spain's dominance in world football came to an end when Chile beat the world champions 2-0 in Rio de Janeiro on Wednesday. Spain earlier lost to Netherlands 5-1. Elsewhere, the Netherlands fought hard to edge Australia 3-2 in the other group B tie in Porto Alegre on Wednesday. Consequently, Netherlands edged Chile to top the group on account of a better goal difference, while Australia and Spain have each lost two matches. Meanwhile, Cameroon suffered a humiliating 4-0 loss to Croatia in Manaus on Wednesday. Having earlier lost 1-0 to Mexico, Cameroon are out of contention for a place in the knockout stage of the contest. Talking to my colleague James Batty, a former editor for the Cameroon Herald newspaper, Franklin Bayan described the public reaction back at home.
Cameroon is a country where people love football very much. And if this was a good day at the World Cup, it would be very noisy because I've seen families place their TVs outside on the veranda so that those who don't have TV sets can join them to watch from even just passers-by. And that means that if there were any goals, if there was any victory, you'd hear a lot of noise. This is one strange World Cup when I haven't heard, not even in one instance, any shouting of any sort. There's been nothing to celebrate about. And you can imagine that on the night when Cameroon's journey at the World Cup has ended, it has even been quieter than you can imagine. It's quiet and dead outside. Cameroonians are sad.
Frankly, I was watching the game and Song got a red card. And then coming to the end of the game, I saw two Cameroonian players headbutting each other. Talk to me about the character of the players.
We know that Cameroonian players have had in our history, the 1990 World Cup, the 94 World Cup, the 98 World Cup, we've taken silly red cards because of sometimes misconduct, sometimes we thought it was the injustice of the referee. Now, what happened today, I don't think it has got anything to do with any of these old grudges. I think it's just a breakdown of morale. Alex Song's red card was really a very silly, stupid red card. I do not know how any player would get himself to the point of elbowing another, even if I know that he was a little jacked by the Croatian player. But I'm sure that it takes a short-tempered person to react the way he did.
That was Franklin Bayan, former editor, Cameroon Herald newspaper, speaking in Yaounde, Cameroon. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The World Health Organization says Ebola is still spreading in West Africa, where the death toll from the virus has climbed to more than 330. The WHO says local authorities have reported 5 new deaths in Guinea, 4 new deaths in Sierra Leone, and 5 new deaths in Liberia during the past week. All of the deaths and more than 30 other suspected cases are centered in the region where the three countries' borders come together. And a bomb blast at a site where Nigerian football fans had gathered to watch the World Cup has killed at least 21 people. That's it for this Thursday, June 19th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Marco Ullman, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping that you have a trouble-free Thursday. Stay tuned for International Edition next.
VOA Africa Health Network, a multimedia network reaching 50 million Africans weekly. We bring you relevant, reliable health news and information. We ask you about the health problems most important to you and inform you about health problems impacting your community. VOA Africa Health Network. Visit our website at www.africahealthnetwork.com.
Hello,
I'm Linor Moudou. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.